Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's October 11th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Corbett. Wait, October 11th, 2011. It's almost 11-11-11. What's going on? It's Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Tonight, the topic is Cider Week NYC. Welcome to Beer Sessions. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. To learn more about beer and the world of beer, go to GreatBrewers.com and supported by the Good Beer Seal, GoodBrewSeal.com. All right, here we are tonight, Cider Week, jam-packed with guests. I'm here with Jen Swartman from Blind
Tiger.
Hi there. How are you
tonight?
Great
to be back. I'm fantastic, and I'm so excited about this show because I know I'm going to learn a lot.
Well, there's a lot to talk about, but we're going to talk about Cider Week tonight.
Yeah, and so when is Cider Week?
Well,
I'm just finding out. It's New York Cider Week is coming up.
Is it coming up next week?
You're the one who told me.
Is it November, October?
I hope that's why we're all here.
Well, Cider Week's coming up, October 16th to 22nd, I think. But the reason we're here is we have some really cool people. We have, I have to introduce him, Mr. Christian Drouin. Please say your name,
good.
Sir, because we respect your ciders very much. From France, and this is where it all started.
Christian Drouin.
close, you were close.
You guys, do you have a really good tradition of cider making in your region?
Oh, yes. I think we have produced Normandy cider for at least 2,000 years because that was mentioned by the Roman when they invaded our country 2,000 years ago.
So Normandy is the center of French cider production?
Oh, yes, it is. Normandy and Brittany, too.
Okay.
Although we are in competition.
Yeah.
So we're out of our league in terms of cider. We've had home cider makers on, but we haven't really covered cider before. There's some great American cider makers that we'll talk about a little later in the show. There are some other more commercial cider makers who are stepping it up. But it really comes back to France. I mean, as far as I know, France is the only place where you have these specialty apple beverages. You've got Calvados.
Yeah.
You've got sparkling ciders, you know. Well, what's the full variety of hard apple ciders that you guys make?
I think this is exactly what makes the production in Normandy unique. We have many, many different apple varieties, cider apple varieties. Nobody knows. Today, we think it's somewhere between 400 and 700. Last centuries, I found in books that there were more than 2,000 to 2,500 apple varieties which were listed.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's but in an orchard, what you normally find, it's somewhere between 15 and 30 different. And bittersweet, sweet, acidic, that's the blend of all those varieties which make products from Normandy unique, although you produce cider in many countries in the world, yeah.
So obviously cider making is a lot more like wine making than it is like beer brewing because you're dealing with an agricultural product.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I assume there's a lot of blending, not only of varietals, but of batches and things. Cider blenders, is that what you call it?
Yeah,
like
that's
a wine blender.
That's correct. For the cider, in fact, we have to blend different varieties of apples to get the results you want to get. You can be free if you do not enter into the appellation, but we have a cider cidre pays d'auge with an appellation contrôlée. For that one, the constraints are, oblige you to select only 10 apple varieties plus two local where you are located. There might be two special varieties that you can add to the blend. So
okay, so up to 12.
It's up to 12 for the cidre pays d'auge with the appellation contrôlée. The other cider, you can use whatever you want. But the appellation, you have to to give a specific style which is recognized by Institut National des Appellations d'Origine.
So how did your family get involved in making ciders, hard ciders?
Well, that's not the normal way. My father in 1960 wanted to buy a country house in Normandy, somewhere between Honfleur and Deauville in Pays d'Auge, the best area for Calvados and cider. And in fact, he bought a farm and ended with many acres of apple orchards. And the decision was what to do with all those apples. And at that time, every farmer was producing cider in Calvados. So he decided to produce Calvados and built a stock of all the stuff before starting a small business from that. But in fact, he was hoping I would do that. And so this is what I decided to do in 79. My son joined me 7 years ago, and my son is much more involved in the cider. I was more transforming the cider into Calvados, but now we really want to to produce and sell cider in bottle. Yeah,
and Calvados is actually the distilled version.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Calvados is the distilled version. In Pays d'Auge, we have to distill it twice, like cognac. It's an aged in oak cask for a minimum of 2 years. And that's what the now the European regulation say that we have to name it cider spirit, Calvados, being the appellation contrôlée. And outside of Europe, it's we say more apple brandy.
Okay.
Christian, tell us about, you poured a cider for us. What are we drinking right now? And one thing you said to me before, you wanted to make sure that our cider week was about hard cider.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We assume that, but...
Yeah, because the first time, that was in New York a long time ago, and there was a market in the south of Manhattan in October or something like that, and somebody, oh, do you like to drink a glass of cider? I said, yes, for sure. And that was apple juice. So,
yeah, unfiltered apple juice is often named cider, but we're learning.
And you're here with Michael. Michael, what's your last name?
Opalinski.
And you're from, where are you from?
I grew up in Providence. But
I mean, what's your affiliation with Christian?
Oh, right, of course. What company am I from? I'm from, I work for Be United. We're an importing company, primarily a beer importer, but we have a small cider list as well. And Christian is one of our producers.
So how did you guys branch out and start becoming involved with French ciders, hard ciders?
Well, part of our company's philosophy is really searching for high-quality, traditional products from Europe. We started with beers, obviously, in 96. And just with some of our employees traveling around Europe searching for better beers, one of them stumbled upon Norman cider tradition. He happened to also be passionate about ciders. So he proposed that to our president back then, and so we started to bring them on.
Do you bring in any of the Calvados?
We do not, no.
Does the Calvados make it into the United States?
Oh, yes, but of course it's a different network.
Yeah, sure.
Because Be United is specialized in beer and non-pasteurized beer, which is... very important to us because non-pasteurized cider is fragile and you need a lot of expertise in handling that, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Chris, are you here for all of Cider Week or just here for a few days?
I'm here for a few days. I come every year, that period of the year. I like it.
Make an excuse.
Well, you know what's funny is I've flubbed it before. I know a lot about Cider Week, and our friend Sarah Grady at Glenwood has been organizing it. And all of a sudden, the date just went blank, but I know it's starting on Sunday. And we're having a lot of fun things. But you're going to go after this. You're on your way to somewhere in Manhattan.
Yeah, that's correct. We have. I was asked to conduct a tasting at the Brandy Library.
So very fancy, cocktail spirits lounge.
The next day. But I'm very pleased that there is a week, cider week. But it would be better. It would be all around here.
It's a start. You've got to start somewhere.
Well, we were talking about before. I mean, we never used to sell that much. I'm going to say cider, and if I say cider, that means hard cider. And I'm glad you brought that up. Because, cider, I guess, I mean, we talked about when cider first started, in America, it was always hard cider.
Yeah.
You know, and when in France do you drink the fresh juice?
Well, apple juice is, in France is for children. So what you call an outsider, normally it's ready around April, May, June, depending. We have our fermentation is very slow because we are very traditional. We do not eat. And so we start to sell the production usually early June, and the beginning of June. And
do you pasteurize that or you just...
No, it's traditional cider. It's produced simple way. I mean, we start the fermentation in the barrel. We bottle. Fermentation goes on in the bottle. Transformation of sugar into alcohol and production of sparkling of carbonic gas, which explain why it's sparkling. It's natural bubbles.
It's delicious, yeah. And it's got a great barnyardy characteristic to it. There's a little bit of you taste the farm.
It still smells delicious. Apples.
Yeah, nothing is added. The product is absolutely pure, and our apples are grown in traditional orchards, so we don't use any chemicals.
And you brought a second bottle for us. What's this, Christian?
Oh, that's Perry cider. So this is produced exactly the same way, but from pears, which like apple cider are not good to eat.
So not a blend. Not a blend of apples and pears. It's 100% pear.
No, this one is 100% pears. We have six different pears variety in that one. And it's from the taste point of view, maybe it's closer to some wines. And in the 19th century, after Phylloxera, it was shipped in large quantity to Champagne because they had not enough champagne, so they were mixing the champagne and the poire.
Did anyone notice?
Apparently, nobody complained.
This one. Yeah, this is completely different, and I don't necessarily taste a lot of pear like we know pears, but man, if you were a sour beer drinker, you would definitely gravitate to this. There's a tartness to it that's really
very special bottle.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a bottle of this at Jamie's number 43.
Yeah, good.
On the list.
Good.
We're going to stock up for Cider Week, yeah, before they jack up the prices. Yeah. You know? Christian, okay, this is the tough question, because I know you have to go to the Brandy Library. And you won't have time to stay with us at Roberta's and have dinner and all the full nine yards. Okay, it's a special night in New York, and you're here for Cider Week. And you're at a favorite restaurant of yours with some of your importers and all that. In a very simple meal, what beverages would you choose to accompany with the meal?
Well, if it's seafood, definitely Perry cider. If it's... white meat or fish, apple cider match very well. And with dessert, it all depends what kind of dessert. If you have an apple pie or something like that, I say a good cider pays d'auge is wonderful. And,
what was that, pays d'auge?
Pays d'auge. Pays d'auge is the appellation contrôlée. Oh. It's a small part of Normandy, which has been always famous for product from the soil, you know, Camembert, Livaro, Pont l'Évêque, all those cheeses are from Pays d'Auge, and the oldest appellation contrôlée is Calvados Pays d'Auge in Normandy. So now,
okay. Huh. What about some other things? There's some cider makers are making like iced wines or givray. Is that the same thing?
Ice wine. That was not traditional. I have one of my friends who now produce one, but of course the climate is not the same climate as in New England or Quebec. It's so you have to chill your apples. I mean,
you have to simulate the ice.
Yeah, you have to simulate the ice. Yeah, you have to freeze your apples because that's when the climate is not. Of course, it's not cold enough to do that in a natural way. But why not? I mean, the success of this product produced in Quebec, for instance, worldwide for the ice cider. Encourage other producers to follow that. And
Christian, there's a guest just came in. It's Chris LaHolt. He writes for a couple press, including Serious Eats. But his own site is, what is it? It's
So my own site is idrunkthat.com, and then I write the Cider Press for Serious Eats.
The Cider Press. So Chris, just let's ask Christian a question before he takes off.
Oh, I mean, I could just listen to Christian talk all the time about cider. I mean, it's really interesting because I deal with American cider makers all the time, and to listen to you guys who have been doing it for kind of so long, it's phenomenal. I mean, the thing that I would always want to know is, are there any American ciders that you've drank recently since you've kind of been here more, and so American ciders having this revival that you really appreciate or respect?
Oh, no, I've tasted some very good cider produced in New England. And my wish is, I don't know how to start that, but my wish is we work together, the people from Normandy, the people from New England, to promote cider as a drink that we can drink all year round, not only when we harvest the apples, because right. that would be great. I mean, it's an alternative to wine. It's a natural product. It's not too strong in alcohol, a healthy product. And on this side of Atlantic, I think you are also more and more enthusiastic with that, and why not work together to promote the category?
Absolutely. More people need to know that there's so many cider producers, because I think most people just have no idea how many small farms are producing cider for their, even if it's just their community. It's happening all over in the United States, and obviously there are a lot of, I had no idea there were that many varietals of apple to play with. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And do you ever eat apples, or do you only raise cider apples?
Sorry?
Michael, please translate. Do you ever eat apples?
Oh, yes, of course.
You
I
do.
I eat the apple, you know. It's my doctor told me that I eat too many apples. This is why I have too much sugar.
They're supposed to keep the doctor away.
But why? This is what I say. I say, well, you know, in a small glass of Calvados 4 centiliters, you have the equivalent of 7 apples, so you are good for the week.
Yeah.
But I eat easily 2, 3, 4 apples a day when I'm at home, and sometimes even more. So I was told there was a lot of sugar in each apple, and that might be too much.
Michael, what do you think about Cider Week? I mean, you're representing quite a few brands. You got Domaine DuPont.
Mm-hmm. As well as Christian Duran.
And any other brands that you're representing?
Yeah, lastly, we have one cider from Spain, from the Basque Country, which is very different in style from the Normands.
How is it different?
Well, it's not as carbonated at all, I'd consider it to be much more of a farmhousey, rustic beverage than this. I mean, you did call this barnyard.
There's an undertone.
Wildness.
It's not,
yeah, it's definitely got some funk to it. Absolutely. The Normans do. But there's an elegance in these that you don't find so much in the Basque. The Basque are, you can find aromas of Band-Aid. I mean, I would guide lambic drinkers more towards Basque, actually.
Oh, really?
Than I would towards Normand.
Good to know.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming, Christian and Michael.
Can I do a quick website plug? So if you'd like to find some more information about the Drawn Ciders or any of the ciders that we do offer through our company, you can check us out at www.beunitedint.com. On the left side of the page, you'll see a cider tab. You can just click on that and find the information. You'll also find contact information for me on the website. If you'd like to know where you can find the ciders in your area, please feel free to contact us. From Christian's Orchard, we have 3 different ciders that we do bring in. The Pays d'Auge, which has the AOC certificate, which we discussed on air, as well as the Poiré. And lastly, another cider that is fermented entirely in stainless steel tanks and then bottled. That's it.
All right.
Thank you.
Christian, anything else you want to say to us?
Well, you are most welcome to visit us every year. I have the visit of 1 or 2 cider producers from New England. I'm very pleased to see that. But consumers are also welcome. We are open every day but Sunday, all year round. So those who visit Normandy, we're in a beautiful part of Normandy, and you are welcome.
All right. Fantastic. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes with Greg Hall and some others.
Thank you so much.
For Cider Week on Beer Sessions Radio.
Monday, Monday, so good to me. Monday morning, it was all I hoped it would be. Oh, Monday morning, Monday morning, couldn't guarantee that Monday. Monday. Monday, Monday, sometimes it just turns out that way. Oh, Monday morning, you gave me no warning of what was to be. Oh, Monday, Monday, how could you leave and not take me? Every other day.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Tonight my co-host is Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger. How are you, Jen?
I'm doing really well. This is fun.
Wasn't that cool, Mr. Christian Rouen?
Rouen.
From the Rouen. Yeah.
I think we did okay with the pronunciation.
Well, Cider Week, we are rolling. Cider Week starts on Sunday. And we've got, say your names, guys.
Guidon with Original Sin Cider.
And Chris LaHalt with the Cider Press, and I Drunk That.
All right, and a special guest on air, Greg. Greg Hall, are you with us?
Hey, yeah, I'm here. I'm right here.
How are you, buddy?
Doing great. How are you, Jimmy?
Well, Chris, Greg, we want to talk to you because, you know, everyone knows you from Goose Island, but you got a new project, and we heard that it's cider.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. Back in 2000, I took... five of the Goose Island Brewers over on a tour of breweries in England, and we visited about a dozen breweries, and we ended up north in the city of York and went to a pub called the Maltings, and they were having a cider festival. And back in 2000, the only ciders I'd had were kind of the industrial type, and it really opened my eyes and got me excited about cider. And it's always had been something I've had on the back burner, and with the new opportunities for me this year, it presented itself as a great way to get into the cider business.
It seems like a great time, too, since it seems to be gaining a lot of momentum. So your timing was great. How did you...
Yeah, you know, it's exactly like in the 80s and 90s with beer. You know, now there's a lot of kind of industrial stuff available, and of course, there's a lot of really great small cider makers, but they're regional or sub-regional, you know, and I think there's room for a lot more. Just like, again,
yeah,
the beer world was 15, 20 years ago.
So, Greg, are you planning to make cider? Is that what your plan is?
Yeah, absolutely. I just got back yesterday from 2 weeks in Normandy. I was making cider with the fine people at DuPont. So kind of learning their methodology, and I tell you, I learned a ton. Tasted a bunch of great Norman and Breton and La Perche ciders.
So are you becoming a farmer also? Are you going to grow apples, or are you just sourcing from
local? I'm going to source, yeah. What I, you know, as a brewer, you know, I grew some hops in my front yard, but nothing really production quality.
Right.
And I have an enormous respect for farmers, and that's a whole nother business.
Indeed.
And I happen to actually have got some friends already who are apple farmers. So I figured rather than compete with them, I would use the grapefruit they're already growing.
Hey, Greg, there's another cider maker here, Guidon Call from Original Sin, and I want to bring him in the conversation, because Guidon has had Original Sin for how many years now?
14 years.
So. And tell us about how you got started.
You know, I started in a small winery in upstate New York. I made mixes. The time was very different for hard cider back then. It was hard to find a distributor, so I took a carload of cider and went to the East Village in Brooklyn. Just went bar to bar, getting places to stock it. In those days, even getting people to stock cider was quite the challenge. But after a year of pounding the pavement and faxing every week, Brooklyn Brewery, which is then the big craft distributor, listed places to stock the product, they eventually took it in, which was a huge break. So that's how I got going.
But originally, you were just, what were you doing? Sourcing grapes or apples?
I was sourcing apples from upstate from
grapes,
the
apples.
You know, Ulster.
From
the
Hudson. You mixed your apples
fruit
with the grapes.
From the Hudson Valley, which is actually a very renowned area for apple production and for cider making once upon a time, as well as it is again today. So
and then
absolutely, there's there's great great apples up there. You're lucky to have them.
Yeah, and actually one kind of cool thing now is my family had a dairy farm in upstate New York, and sadly the farm went out of business about 20 years ago, but this coming spring I'm planting a small orchard of 25 varieties of apples, many of them being experimental, many heirloom cider apples as well as modern day apples. And even though I agree with you that it's going to be quite a challenge, it seems like there's nothing more wonderful and romantic than running an orchard. I think actually the one thing about cider is the more that you learn about apples and cider, the more you kind of want to get out there and, you know, and get involved in planting your own, in farming as well. So
Greg, tell us when you get started, I mean, what states or what regions are your apples going to come from?
The great thing about apples is they grow just about anywhere. And obviously, I'm going to be looking for the traditional cider varieties, some of the English and the French, as well as the North American cider varieties. But, I'm used to buying hops every year and going out to Yakima and rubbing hops for 3 days. And that's about my favorite thing to do, other than go drink beer with guys like you, Jimmy. But
that's always fun.
It's great, but I only got to do it 3 days a year. The great thing about cider is that the cider makers regional, but the apple growers are regional too. So I'm getting apples from Illinois, and I'm going to get most of them from Michigan, which is a really big apple growing state here in the Midwest.
And are there a lot of varieties of cider apples being grown up there for you to choose from? I mean, we were just hearing about how many hundreds and hundreds of cider apples or varieties are grown in France, but how many are there up in like Michigan for you to choose from?
Well, the one, of course, most of the apples are in that kind of classic nine grocery store varieties now.
Yeah.
But, I don't need that much. So I'm lucky that I've got a friend that grows a bunch of English varieties. They've got some Red Streak, some Cox Orange Pippin, Chisel Jersey. So a lot of the English varieties I can get small amounts of to kind of get me started.
Right.
And then the great thing, too, is there are people that are really excited about putting some trees in for me. So what I got to do is figure out which trees to put in and keep it going like that.
Sure. And then another question is barrelage. We're used to talking about barrelage in beer. How big a cidery are you going to be starting out?
Because I think first year we're going to be producing our cider at a independent winery.
Okay.
Under contract, just because it's a little too quick to get it turned around.
Uh-huh.
We're going to do about 1,000 beer barrels worth.
Okay. Yeah.
So about 2,000 kegs.
Yep.
And then the idea is we're looking for property in Michigan right now that hopefully we can close on by the end of the year and then build a place. So by this time next year when it's harvest, we can start pressing at our own place.
That's great.
Awesome.
Can't wait to hear about it.
Chris is here from idrunkthat.com. Chris, any questions for Greg?
That's a good question.
Roll today. I'm just going to pull him in and say,
I get these like questions thrown at me like, hey, what would you say in this situation? I think that the question that a lot of people have, especially now I'm also a home brewer, so I think that a lot of home brewers or small craft brewers want to know is what's that sort of distinct difference between making beer and now making cider? Like, how is that different for you?
It's I'm learning that it's obviously you're sourcing apples, so you've got one product, but there's really as much variability you can put into cider, I think, as you can beer, which is more than I expected, to be honest. But the more I learn about it, not only are you using different apple varieties, you can press them at different ripeness. You can macerate for different periods of time. Right now, we're playing with many different yeast strains. We'll probably ferment with multiple yeast strains and then end up blending.
Yeah. I was going to say,
get into barrel aging, and there's so much you can do. You'll never get, I think beer is unique compared to cider and wine and even spirits, in that the breadth of possibilities is almost endless.
Yeah, it's funny, because now that I think about it, it makes some like perfect sense for you to get into this, Greg, because you're already known for being such a master like barrel ager of beer, you know, and watching that and probably doing a lot of blending. So it's a new usage of that skill that you've always like honed and perfected over years.
Absolutely, you know, and it's great because I've spent much of the last 5 or 6 years really working with a lot of chefs and doing a lot of chef collaborations here in Chicago. We're releasing one. Goose Island's releasing one. I keep saying we. Goose Island's releasing one that we brewed with Rick Bayless here in Chicago. And the one thing that the chefs keep saying when we've talked about beer and food is they want more acid and less bitterness, which is basically describes cider.
Yeah,
perfectly. So that's one of the things I'm really excited about, because my belly, a lot of it is beer in the last 20 years, but there's a lot of good food in there too. And I like the only thing better than eating or drinking is eating and drinking together.
Agreed. Definitely. And the acidity is kind of like how wine has always worked so well with food too. So it's playing with those similar components, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, and you know, real intrigued by like the Spanish ciders, you know, that are all, they're super lactic. They're kind of like the lambics of the cider world, super tart, a lot of acidity. I think there's a lot of fun stuff that, you know, I don't think anybody's making cider like that outside of Spain, but I don't know why you couldn't. It's basically, it's manipulating fermentation. And, you know, that's something that I think as a brewer, I've got some experience doing. So, you know, we will be in the future playing around with certainly multiple strains of Brett and lacto, and doing all sorts of really cool stuff with fermentation, as well as barrel aging with new barrels, old barrels, bourbon barrels, and really having fun that way.
So, Greg, when can we taste some of your ciders?
Hey, I'm excited to get them out. Hopefully, I'm not going to say hopefully. Absolutely, I will be out next year for New York Cider Week.
Excellent. Stay on the line. Gideon called from Original Sin. You started off. You told us how you started with your family and blah blah blah. The cool thing though is you're really moving up now.
Yeah, I just released two heirloom apple ciders. One is single varietal Newtown Pippin, and Newtown Pippin has an incredible historical significance in the apple industry, as well as culturally in this country. It was an apple that originated from first harvested in 1740 from Newtown, which is now Queens, New York. It's the most famous apple from the five boroughs. And the early harvest, almost all the early harvest, was using for making hard cider. And if you look at historical texts of what Newtown Pippin cider is like, it said it was very clear and flavorful. And fortunately for me, when producing this product, that's very similar to the way the product came out. So in many ways, like the product I'm making here, which is a hand-pressed Newtown Pippin apples, is very similar to the cider that was very much considered the top ciders of the early days of this country.
Because Chris is here too. I mean, just thinking about the last few years of cider, I mean, you couldn't sell good cider for a long time, and now it's flying out. And I remember the times I first met Gideon. Over the last 8 years, we'd always talk about how to market your ciders. And I felt bad because your original product was always so good, better than the other typical ciders. And now I think, what's going on?
And I think that's sort of what's happening, is that you kind of looked at cider in America 10 years ago, and a lot of what it was doing was playing a little bit into that beer market and a little bit as just sort of an alternative beverage. And so they were going after this very sweet, I don't want to call it like a dessert drink, but very sweet residual sugar type of thing. And now what you see is sort of this revival. And I equate a lot to, I think we've had wine education in this country over the last decade. We've had a ton of beer education in this last decade. And you start to see, like, you couldn't really sell lambics or geezers, you know, a decade ago the way you could now. And now people are all about these tart, acidic flavors, these complex flavors. And they're getting away from this sort of like sweet beverage, and they're getting into sort of the more nuanced ciders that you're seeing today. And I think Guidon is a really good example of somebody who had a really good product, especially for the time. You know, it was exceptional for the time, and now he's moving to that next level, and he's adapting to the palates as they're requesting more of him.
Yeah, which has happened with brewers too. I mean, you know, when the whole beer craze finally hit New York City, only several years ago, really in a big way, suddenly it seemed like all of our brewers were able to rise to the occasion, and they all got excited and they got to be creative again. And when there wasn't a market for what they were doing with their creativity, then why would they produce a bunch of beer no one was going to drink? So now we've got room for Newton Pippin.
And Chris, tell us a little bit, just give us a little overview of Cider Week, because I know you've got some points on that.
So Cider Week was, I think it was kind of a long time coming. It's part of an initiative by the Glenwood from upstate New York, and they're doing a whole series of initiatives to try to revitalize apples within the Hudson Valley. So one of the things they were doing is something called the Apple Project, where they were doing an exchange program between cider makers in France and cider makers in New York State to try to bring people over, educate people on how to save these farms by converting them over to cider farms. So Cider Week is sort of the culmination of this whole thing, and it's going to be a week of events down in New York City. There's going to be cider tastings. There's going to be special events. I think the biggest one is going to be at the New Amsterdam Market. That's the Cider Revival. So it'll be Marlowe & Sons is doing tapas pairings with six different ciders. You've got Bellwether. You've got Eves. I've got a cheat sheet. Foggy Ridge, Farnham Hill, who we'll talk to Steve Wood a little bit later. Eve Cidery, Docks from out in Warwick, and then Breezy Hill. And so you'll be able to come down. Oh, and West County, who makes fantastic cider. So you'll be able to come down and taste those ciders and pair them with small plates.
So, Greg, you're going to come on Sunday and try some great Northeast farm-based ciders?
You know what? I wish I could. I wish I could. But as I said, I just got back from 2 weeks in Normandy and trying to get this cider business off the ground. I am going to be here and up in Michigan getting ready to make some cider.
Last note from you, Greg. Greg, how do you compare what's going on in Normandy with what's happening in America for cider?
Well, you know what? It's very similar. The cider world is very similar to the beer world was 20 years ago. A couple differences. One is the technology of the cider makers is not caught up to the technology of the brewers. So in terms of the sophistication that brewers have in the new world, as far as playing with different yeast strains, for example, they're very, very traditional. The cider makers are in England and in France. Most of them are multi-generational, sometimes 5-10 generations back, and they kind of do stuff the same way they've always done it because it works that way. And I remember when I first went to England, and, you know, most breweries would have, like, a bitter, a special bitter, and an extra special bitter in England, and that was it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a wide variety of three beers that were all the same base. It's just they were hopped differently and watered back. And now you've got, people doing all sorts of American style, shall we say, beers in the UK. People like BrewDog having a lot of fun.
Right. That being said, have you already seen improvements in the system that you can make? I mean, with your expertise?
I would never say improvements to the system. I just think, you know, it's just like in Normandy, everybody makes Normandy style cider, especially because there's an AOC. So everyone uses the exact same apples and the exact same native yeast and the exact same, you know, they do everything exactly the same. So you go to like 28 different farms on the AOC cider route in Normandy, and it's like, oh, this one tastes, you know, just a
really
little bit
similar.
Different than that one. You know, and they're all kind of, it's like if you went on a, if you like went on the New England porter route, and you went to 20 breweries, and they all made porter, and that's it.
Right.
It was all the same. You know, it'd be like, wow, if you love porter, that'd be awesome. But
Greg, I'm sorry I'm going to have to cut you off, but one last thing. So on the way out, we definitely want to talk to you again. If it's possible technologically, you can stay on. We're going to come back with a Steve Wood from Farnham Hill. But how do you want to be known now? So you're Greg Hall what?
That's brewer is like the easy thing in the beer world. So cider maker, ciderist, I don't know. Ask Steve. He's kind of the old man cider maker. So
all right.
Whatever he is.
I hope you can stay on. And we're going to take a short break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Great. Thanks, Jimmy.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. All right, we got some cool guys on the show tonight. Jen Swartman, Blind Tiger, Guy Duncal, Original Sin Cider, Chris LaHalt from Serious Eats, Greg Hall from Mr. Cider Maker himself, and the legend, the only true cider maker in America, Steve Wood from Farnham Hill Ciders. Steve, how are you, buddy?
Hi, pal. How are you?
Good. We're here with, we got some people in the studio here. We're drinking some locally made ciders. Guy Duncal is, Guy, tell us what you're, say hi guys and talk. Come on.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
All right. I'm intense, overwhelmed by Cider Week. It's pretty awesome.
So. I'm sorry, Jimmy. I didn't hear the question. What, you want me to tell you about Cider Week?
Yeah, you tell us about it because you're a big part of it.
Well, it's a great thing that Glenwood's done to encourage enthusiasm in New York about cider, and we're right behind it. We think it's great. I mean, I've never taken the better part of a week off during harvest before, and I'm doing it with a smile on my face here.
You'll be in town
away from
for
the
it.
Farm and down in New York. So
great.
Yeah, it's good news.
The one thing I know about you is that you're a farmer. You're a farmer, an orchardist. How do you describe yourself?
Well, I guess I describe myself as an apple grower. That's what I've done for most of my life. But I guess I'm a cider maker now, too. So you grew up? We grow apples, we make cider. That's what we do.
I know there's a couple of things that you always want to say, and we want to hear it on the air. You are... say it. Come on.
No, how much time you got?
We got a lot of time. Come on.
Well, what I always want to say is that cider, the best ciders reflect the ground the apples are grown in and how those apples are grown and the varieties from which they're made, the varieties that are grown. We have tried for years and have been encouraging others to do the same, to find apple varieties that grow to a very high standard in our ground and our growing conditions, and that we can turn into delicious cider. But my chief interest in cider has to do with the extent to which it reflects the fruit the fruit from which it's made and the ground in which that fruit's grown.
So you guys are in New Hampshire for a. At least how many years? 30 years you've been doing this?
Oh, I don't know. I started working at this orchard in 1965. So I guess I've been here. I've certainly been here for all of my adult life, and I've been here for most of my life. We started fooling around by, grafting cider varieties, English, French, and American cider varieties in the early 80s. Just sort of, we were sort of imagining a little sideline to our main business, which was then, picking and packing wholesale Macintosh and Cortlands. But one thing led to another. That business started to get a little punky, and we, meanwhile, after 10 years of grafting trials of a couple hundred varieties, we we decided to just shift a lot of our production over to cider fruit. And we picked up a handful of varieties that we had become confident would grow very well here, and that's what that was the change. So I guess we got bonded in 1995, so we've been making cider commercially since then, and we obviously had a few years of fooling around before that. But I've had the dirt from this ground under my fingernails since 65.
And Steve, how many varieties of apples are you guys growing now, ballpark?
Well, a couple hundred if you count every branch, because we're still running grafting trials. But in commercial quantities, maybe 20, I guess. I haven't really stopped to count them up. I mean, we still grow some Max and Cortlands and Gala and, you know, regular market varieties. And we grow a fair handful of I guess what you call them heirloom varieties that we wholesale in New York and, you know, all over the place as specialty apples. And about half of our production now, or rather half of our ground now, is dedicated to cider fruit.
Jen, do you know Steve? Have you met him before?
I think I met you one time, maybe at the big union shindig a couple years ago. Were you in town for that? With
I
Arnhem?
Can't remember, and I don't even know who blur. I'm talking to on a phone.
I'm Jen. I bartend at the Blind Tiger, so I'm just a beer geek bartender.
Yes, that's right. We certainly have met. Yeah.
I think I met you, and I've tried your ciders before, and they are all phenomenal, and it's great to talk to you again.
Well, it's very kind of you. We try to make them nice.
You manage.
Steve, you're I just love talking to you. I want to hear something. So tell us, if we went to your orchard right now, what would be the biggest part of it? Would it be the experimental, you know? What would you want to show me?
It's sort of divided. I guess, I don't know how to... it's hard to think that way, Jimmy. I guess about 40% of it's dedicated to cider fruit, which are apples that can't be used for anything else. Most of them are, you know, disgusting. They're bitter and astringent, and you just don't even want to hold the flesh of them in your mouth. So that's maybe 40%. And then the remaining 60% is divided between, you know, more common market varieties like McIntosh and Cortland, which we still grow very well. We just grow it for a much smaller market than we used to. And then the heirloom varieties that I described before, things like Asopa Spitzenberg and Golden Russet, Wixen, Hudson's Golden Gem. I mean, there's quite a list. And some of those heirloom varieties, a few of them, this is by absolutely happy serendipity, a few of those varieties that we originally planted for fresh market turn out to make really stunningly good hard cider and turn out to be very they become extremely valuable blending apples in our ciders, chiefly as a source of acid, because most of the cider apples that we really like are very low in acid, and if you've had our ciders, you know that our ciders are not low in acid. And so that acidity comes from things like Wixen and Asopa Spitzenberg, which are also beautiful to eat out of hand. Or Calviel Blanc d'Hiver, which is a beautiful old French cooking apple, which also is a nice source of acid for cider fruit, for cider rather. But
Do you do many single varietal ciders, or most of them blends?
That's a curious question. I'm interested in that, and we do make one Kingston Black. There's one cider apple that we've identified that it's a fairly old apple from near Martock in Somerset, England, that's acquired some fame over the last century or so as a single variety cider apple, and it's a very curious cider. We like it a lot, and we make, I don't know what, 150 cases or something a year. Not a whole lot of it, but most ciders. Again, this is my, you know, humble view, not gospel truth. I think most cider apples, most ciders are better for blending, and most of our ciders are actually blends of many different varieties. The bittersweets, which provide the tannic underpinning and the real sort of all the bitterness and astringency, but also a lot of the structure of our ciders. All those varieties, like Dabinet and the Arlington Mill, there's a list of them. They are very low in acid, and so if you try to make a single variety cider of them, you wind up with this sort of insipid, almost greasy stuff.
Kingston Black
meanwhile,
is awesome.
most of the sharper varieties are, you know, they're more sort of exciting if you do them by themselves. Ashmead's Kernel, say, or Sopa Spitzenberg, but you know they've got something resembling tooth stripping acidity. I mean, they're very sharp, and they're kind of out of balance. And so, though they're interesting, I don't think. I just think most ciders are better for having most cider apples are better off with friends in the tank than they are by themselves in the tank.
Steve, you have a lot of
we keep sort of fooling around with single variety ciders, but you know this is a prejudice as well with wine. Though you know most of the wines I like the most are not varietal wines. There are things like Chateauneuf du Pape, which is a blend of a lot of different varieties. The great Condria is, you know, that's chiefly Viognier grape, but it's also usually always actually got some Syrah, a red grape, in with it. I just think most fruits, you know, however stunning they may be on their own,
are lacking
in something, and the only way to get that something is from some other variety.
Steve, you know what? We made a big mistake. We should have had you on first, and we had you on last.
well, you'd be all right, dude.
We're going to talk more, but I want to ask you something. Do you have a lot of young cider makers coming in and learning from you?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we've been pushing this stuff. I mean, it was a kind of voice crying in the wilderness for quite a long time, trying to get people to do anything like what we've been doing. I mean, it's hard to convince an apple grower who's already on his way out of business because the apple market's so punky, you know, that what he really needs to do is plant a bunch of acres of inedible apples. but you know, it's very encouraging. The last 5 or 6 years, in various areas of the country, some up here in Virginia, out in Oregon, there are a few sort of springing up in New York. There are people who are actually beginning to grow the right fruit. There are a lot of people making cider, but unfortunately, to my mind, unfortunately, and often of them are just using what apples are available to them. They're not actually growing fruit for the purpose. But there are more and more cider makers, you know, new cider makers, who are actually really paying attention to the fruit they put into the cider. And I think in the last 5 years, the U.S. cider across the board has improved enormously. We're pretty hopeful that this is a trend that will continue.
Steve, we have with us Guidon Call from Original Sin, and he's trying to branch out and do some more orchard-based and single varietal ciders. Have you met him before? You know,
Guidon? Yeah, I've met him. Gosh, I met him a long time ago. I think I met him in probably the mid-90s. I really admire what he's doing. Fair enough. He's got a business making Original Sin, which is, you know, one of the regular six-pack ciders. And, you know, you've heard me say this before, Jimmy, I don't denigrate any of that stuff. I mean, people are doing a good job of making stuff that people want to drink. You know, it's great. Woodchuck, Original Sin, Hardcore, all of those guys. Harpoon. But, you know, Guidon, he's always, I think, always been somewhat interested in doing something beyond that, and the fact that he's trying to do it right now, I think, is really admirable. And I tasted his cider at the Pippin, the Newtown Pippin at your place.
Yeah, we're drinking that right now.
And
it's delicious.
It was really, really well made. I mean, you know, I think he's really onto something. I think, you know, that cider, again, this is my prejudice, it would be better in my mind if it had a few other varieties in it. But still,
Guidon, why did you go with a single varietal?
You know, I think that...
What's that?
Guidon's here. He wants to talk to you.
Yeah, I think to me, the fascination of cider, you can't separate it from the apple. And simply educating people on these apples, and which you can do through offering single varietals, might be the best way to expanding a knowledge base and people's appreciation of ciders. So... I mean, exactly. One of the things I pulled out here, I have an Ashmead's Kernel that I found this week at the Union Square Farmers Market. It's amazing for anybody in New York out there to just walk through the farmers markets and see what apples are available. And many of the apples that Steve just mentioned, you can find in the farmers markets. These are apples that are not readily available in supermarkets. And it's worth grabbing one, biting into it, and just get a sense of the nuances of the different apples that are out there.
And sort of to bring the point back to beer, since this is Beer Sessions Radio, I think what Guidon is doing is really nice in a comparison to what people are doing in single hop, right? So you look at like McKellar's beer series where they're doing single hop beers, and you can really kind of get into, oh, what does Cascade taste like? Oh, what does Willamette taste like? The people doing these single varietal ciders really allow you to go, oh, that's what Newtown Pippin is, you know? And that's, I think, what Steve's doing in, you know, his orchard all day long anyway, eating apples and drinking out of the barrels. But it gives those of us at home an opportunity to kind of deconstruct the ciders a little bit and understand where they come from.
Can I make one really important point, which I'm shocked about? Like, every book that's out of print before 1922 is available on Google Books. So I found a quote from 1891 from a paper written from the Royal Society of Chemistry in which an English chemist compared the American Newtown Pippin to English ciders, and the allies of Newtown Pippin to explain why is it better than English ciders. So actually, this cider specifically has a long history in this country. And I also found menus from the 1800s in which people were making single varietal Newtown Pippins. So I think, once again, it's hand-in-hand with the history of what apples are all about when you make single varietal.
And Steve, Greg, are you still on the line? Greg Hall?
Yeah, I'm here.
Greg, Greg's new to this, but he's not new. Steve, have you met Greg Hall yet? Have you guys?
I don't think so, Greg. Have I? I'm a little foggy. No, I've got a short. Short-term memory. I'm sorry about that.
Everybody said you must know Steve.
Well, I want to make sure that you guys do meet because you know you got to go to Steve's. You're up in Lebanon, New Hampshire, right, Steve?
Yep.
Greg, you got to go to Lebanon, New Hampshire, and hang out with Steve and see his orchard, and. He's the dean of cider, and I think you're the real reason why we have Cider Week, Steve.
What's that? I didn't hear what you said.
I think you're the real reason that we have Cider Week in New York.
Very nice of you. I actually, you know, that's very nice of you to say. I actually think it is largely because of something resembling a movement that you and others have been a part of. I mean, people are actually paying attention to cider. We can't do this by ourselves. What we can do is try to help it along, and you know, whatever. I mean, you got my opinion, and you know, we obviously don't all agree on this phone, but that's part of the fun of this whole thing, is you know, people just trying to figure out how to make delicious cider from good apples, you know, that has been happening more and more over the last few years, and we need the people in the market like you to actually get it down people's throats. That's one of the hardest things. You can make something that's unbelievably delicious to yourself. If you can't get somebody to actually put it in a glass and pour it down their throat without punching
Let me tell you what
first,
some of the ciders we're going to be serving
anyway.
Next week and during Cider Week, we're going to see a lot of the DuPont ciders from France, everything from sparkling to even Jouvray ice wines. We're going to have Christian Drouin. We got a whole bunch of Farnham Hill and some other. There's a lot of Chris here has the list at the New Amsterdam Market. There's a whole bunch of a Northeast farm. How do you call them? Farm based ciders. How do you describe that?
I don't know if we call them
orchard based. I don't know whatever based. We call them orchard based, but you can call them whatever you want as long as they're made from the right apples.
Yeah, I think that's really where the action is you know, starting with the apples and. You know, making good cider. Well, listen, thank you, Steve. I got to cut you off because we're going to another show. This is Beer Sessions Radio. Cider Week is coming up. We had some great guests tonight. Brooklyn Pour is going to be this weekend. If you want to get a discount code, it's Voice Street gets you 10% off, villagevoice.com. Pig Island Goers, Pig Mountain this year. Saturday, we're going up to the Catskills. We're going to have some Omegang beer and... Four chefs and eight pigs. And New York Cider Week, go to ciderweek.com. For more information, visit appleproducts.glenwood.org. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com and to the Good Beer Seal. And again, this is Beer Sessions Radio. Thanks to Long List, Jen, Chris, Gita, and Michael, Christian, Greg, and Steve. Joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Bye, guys. Thank you.
It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough. Champagne costs too much.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com. as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following message has been brought to you by Taste Brooklyn. Our city's finest chefs partner with farmers and local vineyards next to the Green Market for an extraordinary outdoor culinary festival. Try exquisite delicacies using locally grown seasonal delights on the plaza outside Brooklyn's Borough Hall. Top chefs and artisans will offer sumptuous fare paired with premium wines, all to empower our neediest children to get healthy. The mighty FDNY and DSNY harbor their own culinary masters in uniform. They will cook off against the pros. Sample delicious cuisine without stressing over a reservation while supporting a worthy cause. Taste Brooklyn's Feel to Fork Outdoor Culinary Festival, Saturday, October 15th, 2011, from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Learn more and buy tickets at tastesofbrooklyn.blogspot.com. That's TASTESOF Brooklyn.blogspot.com.